So weird story, right? Bit strange and a bit unsettling. Golden tumours? 70 dead? What's going on there? So sometimes with stories like these, it can help to zoom out and look at the bigger context of what's happening. So let's do that before we start in the story itself. Now, the biggest context is that one day God plans to have us ruling the new creation with Him. But for that, we need to be able to listen to God. So as we go through this, I want you to ask yourself, these people in the story, are they listening to God to find out what He wants, or are they using God to get what they want? See, are they listening to God to find out what He wants, or are they using God to get what they want? So let's zoom out. We'll start with the ark. The story seems like it's about the ark, this religious box thing. But it's not really about the ark itself. It's about what's above the ark, God's presence. Now, God is omnipresent. He's everywhere. But sometimes God manifested His presence in a special way to communicate the kind of relationship He has, something about the relationship between us and Him. Now, since the Garden of Eden, God's presence had remained mostly absent from humans, that special manifested presence, for thousands of years. And that absence communicated the terrible state of the relationship between man and God. But finally, on Mount Sinai, His presence would return to earth. It would appear as a great storm with trumpet blasts, smoke and fire. Later on in history, it would appear as a wind or a radiant cloud or tongues of fire. But at our point in the story, God's presence would be mostly invisible, but its location was specific and constant. It was enthroned above the ark between the cherubim. So above the ark on its lid were these two little statues of angels called cherubim. And God had decided to put His invisible throne between them. That was the only place on earth God's manifested presence was. Israel was the one nation on earth where God's presence could be found. From that nation, the least of all nations, God would bless all the other nations. God would enact His salvation plan through His presence with the little nation of Israel. So, we've got a little bit of context to start looking at our passage now. So what's our passage got to do with God's presence? Well, at our point in the story, the Israelites have managed to lose God's presence. And how'd that happen? Well, as we heard, they took the ark they went into a battle. They decided to take the ark with them. They didn't actually listen to God to find out if they should go into that battle. And they could do that. They had devices to find that out, the Urim and Thummim, it was called. But the people just ignored that and just presumed God would give them what they wanted. And they even presumed they could bring the ark to a battle. So I ask again, does it sound to you like the people were listening to God to find out what He wanted, or were they just using God to get what they wanted? God allowed Israel to lose that battle, and tens of thousands of Israelites died. But even worse than the loss of human life was the loss of the ark. The loss of the ark meant the loss of God's presence. That was the first time in all its history that God's presence had left Israel. The second time would be centuries later, just before the exile. Now, it's hard to explain just how devastating a thing it would be to lose God's presence for the Israelites. It looked as though the nation of Israel had been rejected by God Himself. Even worse, from our perspective, it looked like God's salvation plan for all nations was in the balance. So, the Philistines, they took the ark into their temple and put it next to their God's statue. So the presence of God is now with the Philistines. That raises an interesting question. Would the Philistines listen to God to find out what He wanted, or would they use God to get what they wanted? So God's judgment started to come upon the Philistines. He destroyed their God and started making people sick with tumors. So what should the Philistines do? Well, their first solution was just move the ark to another city. Just pass the problem forward. But then that city got sick. So they moved it on again. And then that city got sick. So it's getting hard to just write off as coincidence. It had probably God. So God was punishing the Philistines, but in a restrained way. And that brings us to our first of our 5 points. Number one, God's punishment of the Philistines was restrained and possibly strategic. So once the Philistines captured the ark, God could have just wiped them all out once. After all, they'd been oppressing God's people, they were sinfully disrespecting the ark, and there is some suggestion that they were stubbornly refusing to admit their mistake. Their own priests asked the Philistine rulers why they had stubbornly hardened their hearts. So the Philistines deserve some punishment. But they were also still a bit confused about who this God actually was. And God took that confusion into account. God's punishment was restrained. It was slow enough to allow the Philistines to respond. It was possibly also strategic. It was possibly the kind of punishment the Philistines could connect in their minds with Yahweh because of what they already knew about the Exodus. So the Philistines were starting to suspect that Yahweh was causing all the sickness, but they weren't certain of it yet or what to do about it. They didn't have the Urim and Thummim like the Israelites had. How would they listen to God? After 7 months of sickness and death, they decided to ask their own pagan priests what to do. The pagan priests suggested they set up an experiment to figure out whether these tumors were a curse from Yahweh or whether it was all just chance. They designed the experiment so in a way that it should have failed. The only way it could possibly work was if Yahweh stepped in to make it work. The experiment involved putting the Ark of the Covenant on a wooden cart. Now, just a side note, the Torah, the Hebrew law, actually forbids transporting the Ark on a wooden cart. There's a special way it's supposed to be transported. But the Philistines didn't know that. So God just sort of let it slide. The Philistines picked two mother cows that had just had baby cows to drive the cart away from their babies, away from their calves. Now, mother cows do not like walking away from their calves. So the whole experiment should have failed. They should have just stayed with their calves. Another reason the experiment should have failed was that cows didn't know the way to the closest town in Israel, Beth Shemesh. So even if the two mother cows did for some reason both decide to abandon their babies, the odds that they would both choose to walk straight to the closest town in Israel was almost zero. So if that experiment worked, the Philistines would have to admit it was Yahweh that made it work, and the tumors they were experiencing really were from Yahweh. The Philistines did show Yahweh a certain amount of respect in how they set up their experiment. They not only put the ark on that cart, but also they included something else on that cart out of respect for Yahweh, some golden objects to symbolize their own guilt. They respected Yahweh enough to worry that they might have angered him. They made 5 golden rats and 5 golden tumors to symbolize the 5 Philistine cities and the tumors and rats that were inflicting those cities. The choice of a valuable metal like gold to make these symbols showed that they were taking Yahweh seriously in the best way they knew how, which brings us to the second point. The Philistines were arguably doing a better job of listening to God than the Israelites were. The Philistines had devised a way to try to listen to God and were showing respect in the best way they knew how. they'd essentially made a pagan attempt at a guilt offering. Now, it was a strange attempt. This is not what the Hebrew law required. You can't just, in the Hebrew law, you can't just buy your innocence with gold. Forgiveness only comes through blood. It's not transaction, it's personal. But the Philistines didn't know that, so God was happy to let it slide. God cooperated with the experiment. God caused the mother cows to pull the cart all the way to Beth Shemesh, and the Philistine rulers followed right up to the border. The Philistines had now witnessed for themselves that the God that they heard about in those Exodus stories was actually real and powerful and to be respected. So God had been letting some things slide with the Philistines up to this point, but there will be much fewer excuses from this point forward. They knew enough to know better. There's a large rock between the territory of the Philistines and the territory of the Israelites in that town of Beth Shemesh that acts as a reminder to the both sides of what had happened. So the Philistines had listened and God had answered. What a rebuke for the Israelites to have a pagan nation do a better job of listening to their own God than Israel did. Unlike the Israelites, the Philistines followed their instructions to the letter. But you have to ask yourself, did the Philistines listen to God because they cared about what he wanted? Or were they just pacifying God to get what they wanted? The Philistine relationship with God may have been respectful, but they had no love for Yahweh. They just wanted him gone. They just paid the price they thought he wanted. It was an impersonal transaction. This is one of the big differences between the pagan gods around Israel and Yahweh's relationship with Israel. The pagans had transactional relationships. Yahweh's relationship with Israel was personal. Transactional relationships are about control and mutual convenience. You're using the other party to get what you want. Personal relationships are about trust and having the other person's best interests at heart. You actually care about the other party and what they want. But at least now, the Ark and God's presence was back in Israel. Which brings us to the third point. God gave the Israelites a second chance. Not only did God defeat Israel's enemies, he returned to them to give them a second chance at being his people. This was the first time that the presence of God had left Israel and then returned to Israel. There would be a second time about five centuries later. The second time God's presence would leave Israel was just before the exile. The second time God's presence would return to Israel was with Jesus. God's presence would be housed in a human tabernacle, the body of Jesus. The king who was held up on the ark between two cherubim would allow himself to be held up on a cross between two thieves. After Jesus' ascension, the presence of God returned to the apostles as tongues of fire, and now his presence is in the church. So his presence is here with us now in this room or wherever God's people choose to meet. But back to our story. When the ark first turned up in Beth Shemesh, the people were glad. The presence of God enthroned between the cherubim had returned. He had defeated their enemies and even brought back some treasure. So the men of Beth Shemesh celebrated. They made an offering to the Lord. They were glad to have God's presence back in Israel. But their good mood would be short-lived. At some point after they made their offering, God killed 70 of them for looking at the ark. Some translations have a much bigger number than 70, but either way, people were killed. Now, it's hard to know for sure why God did this. One possibility is that death is the consequence for anyone who approaches the ark. After all, approaching God's presence like that back then would usually result in death. Now, for Christians today, now that Christ has come, we can safely approach God. God has atoned for sin now. But at that point in history, Christ had not yet atoned for sin. At that point in history, God was trying to reveal sin. He was teaching humanity that there was a serious problem between us and him. So serious, it could result in death. That's why approaching God's ark and God's presence was so dangerous for humans. Most Israelites were forbidden from even looking at the ark. But there are times in Israel's history where they were told, the Israelites were told to take out that ark, and people weren't killed for looking at it. So maybe there's another possibility for why God killed those 70 people. Maybe they looked at the ark in an irreverent way. Some translations say they even looked into the ark, took the lid off and looked inside. That would have been pretty irreverent. They don't all say that, but that's a possibility too. Either way, the men of Beth Shemesh had some amount of evil in their hearts, and evil always has consequences. Which brings us to point four, evil always has consequences. Even for us Christians, our evil, if it's serious enough, might be punished by God. In the book of Acts, when Ananias and Sapphira lied to the Holy Spirit, God killed them, just as he killed the 70 Israelites. In the letter to the Corinthians, when the Corinthian church treated the Lord's Supper with disrespect, God killed some of them, just as he did the men of Beth Shemesh. The 70 deaths did remind the Israelites of their sin and the holiness of God. They were filled with holy fear. So, a bit like the Philistines, they decided to kind of move the ark elsewhere. Now, you might think that the proper place to send the ark would be back to the tabernacle. That's where the ark was supposed to be, in the tabernacle. And the tabernacle was in Shiloh. But instead, these guys just sent the ark to the nearest town, Kiriath Jearim. And instead of sending it to the Levites, it's only the Levites who are supposed to be handling the ark. And in fact, it's a subset of Levites called the Kohathites who are supposed to be handling the ark. They just consecrated another guy, Eleazar, the son of the house of Abinadab. And the house of Abinadab are almost definitely not Levites. This is going to cause problems later on in the story when King David tries to move the ark. So I ask again, were the Israelites listening to God to find out what he wanted, or were they using God to get what they wanted? Point five, many claim to want God in their lives, but change their minds when they see his power. It's interesting to note how both the Philistines and the Israelites followed the same pattern. Both rejoiced when the ark first arrived in their presence. Both were confronted by God's wrath and power against their own evil, and both responded to that power by sending the ark away to another place. Many people claim to want God in their lives, but when he actually turns up, they often change their minds. Think of when Jesus cast the demons into the pigs to save the demoniac. The local villagers begged Jesus to leave. When the Pharisees saw Jesus' miracles, they actually had him crucified to just get him out of their lives. Most of us want a God that we can control, a safe God who will do our will. Our God is safe, but our God is not safe because we are not innocent. And I'm certainly not. I've got no moral high ground here. Some people get overly confident about their own righteousness, but are they actually ready for the real God to turn up? Our God isn't safe, but he is good, especially towards the repentant. We're going to see that next week in chapter 7. Now, some of us probably feel defeated and worthless because of our failures and consequences. And I know I do at times. You can just be tempted like just give in and die. But although our evil will have consequences in this life, these consequences do not need to be eternal. God is greater than our failures. And even in this life, He knows how to bring beauty from ashes. He can bring good things even from us. Don't let the devil tell you otherwise. Don't let the devil steal your joy. Stay humble, but in Christ, we are not defeated. That's what I cling to that. So I'll finish with a question. And by now, you probably know what it's going to be. Like I've mentioned, it's a question I struggle with myself. I'm not taking any moral high ground, but I have to ask it. Do you listen to God to find out what He wants, or are you using God to get what you want? So I'll just invite the musicians up for the last song while I pray. Dear Lord, please help us to be concerned for what You want. Thank You for that. What You want for us is better than anything we could want for ourselves. Amen.